The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The views expressed by Jordan Kimmel do not represent the views of Boyer Asset Management and its affiliates. Any opinions expressed by Mr. Kimmel and any of the participants during the course of this show are not to be considered an offering of securities and investment advice.
Good morning. Welcome to Magnet Investing with Jordan Kimmel, the show that will take you through the ever-changing world of investing for a profit. Now, here's the host of Magnet Investing, Jordan Kimmel.
And good morning, everybody. Good morning and welcome back to Magnet Investing with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. And it is great to be with you again. Folks, for those of you who don't know, this is actually our show that's been on 6 years already with some of the top investment minds, the top authors, money managers alive today. Today's no exception. We're going to actually have quarter past the hour, one of William O'Neill's disciples on. We'll bring on Gil Morales, who has a dynamite title of a book, How I Made 18,000% in the Market. So let's hear what he's learned. Obviously a lot from the Bill O'Neill world. And then at the half past the hour, we're going to bring on the leader of a broker dealer, First Alternative. We're going to bring on Steve Sluth, who's going to be the host again of SRI in the Rockies, or Socially Responsible Investing in the Rockies. And that's an event I plan on being at myself. I plan on developing a real nice relationship with the group. They're very consistent with a message I've been talking about now for well over a year, and is partially the subject of our other show on Wednesdays on Voice America Variety, the Trust Across America show. And folks, this coming Monday, I'll be on Fox again at 2:30 in the afternoon. I'll be highlighting a couple of individual stocks again. But again, the whole message that I think is so important here, I just looked at it, an interview request from a large network, and the discussion was, is the market unhinged? Is the market broken? You see people diving into 0% fixed income right now. You see trillions, literally $4 trillion almost sitting in the hands in the money markets of individuals who are just disgusted and won't invest in the market. They're doing this at almost a 0% return. And what I've talked about again and again lately is it's not that the economy is completely unhinged, and it's not as if the market doesn't go through cycles, which it often does. And again, it's very moody. You'll hear folks talk about the innocuous Mr. Market, who sometimes gets very depressed for long periods of time, offering us stocks at very cheap levels, who then gets manic and kind of wants to buy everything and be involved in everything, and there's a lot of enthusiasm at that time. Prices go sky high, the public comes diving in out of nowhere, only to lose money, and then the process to repeat itself. And what's fascinating is we've had on several individuals on this show who run newsletters, who run timing services or technical services, which services tend, in the past anyway, to give signals, say, every 6, every 18 months, every 12 months, to kind of let them know when it's safe and when it's not safe. Well, a lot of these models have been giving buy and sell signals virtually every couple of weeks now, and we're going through these stretches where the number of new lows dries up, the market gets a little healthy, starts to trade much, much better tone, close at the high of the day, and all these services go out and give a buy signal, and then again, almost every one of them flash the sell signal within the last several trading days, as we're now at 3 months low on the Dow, and number of new highs expand, the number of new lows expanded, the number of new highs contracted, and everyone gave a sell signal, only again for the last couple of days to see the market starting to get strong. If this sounds like people chasing their tail, frankly, it's exactly what it is. And if anything, I can share with you that the market might be emotional, but the individual investors are almost, in my opinion, after 25 years of being at this, they're almost like little children, which are afraid that the sun goes down, it gets dark and very scary, and the sun is never going to come out again. And then the sun comes out and they take a nice long walk in the woods thinking, well, the sun will never go down again. The sun's nice and high in the sky, only to find themselves in the woods in the dark. And I don't know why people can't see the kind of the cadence of the market, if you will, or a little pattern that repeats itself over and over again. What I have shared with you, and I'm not sure what Gil's going to want to talk about, but we had on John Boyk on this show before, who was probably, up until now anyway, the biggest William O'Neill fan I have met so far. In one of his books, he goes back a full century and looks at each decade and then looks at each money manager in that decade who had outstanding returns, what they did a little bit differently, and why was it that they were able to be successful. And folks, in each one of those decades, there were recessions, there was world wars, there was, I mean, you name it, all the things that happened over the last 100 years, and yet these investors, almost all of them, had something unique in common. They didn't over-diversify. They didn't spend that much time dealing with the market itself. Instead, they found areas of the market or individual stocks, individual leaders, maybe sectors. They did several different things, but they figured out a way in each environment how to actually go ahead and be successful. That doesn't mean that everybody can do that, because that's the whole nature and the subject of my book, Magnet Method of Investing, which talks about the bell curve. And frankly, this market is so difficult for somebody who's bright and intelligent and hardworking. It's almost impossible for someone who has a full-time job, a family, a life, hobbies, to go ahead and be a successful investor, unless, again, you could boil it down into something very simple: being able to control your emotions, being able to go against the crowd in many circumstances, and to simply identify maybe 5, maybe 10, hard to find 20, but those individual companies that are just better than their peers in a given sector, in a given industry. And what do I mean by better? Well, their profit margins are higher, their cash flow is greater, their valuation is better. They tend to get a management team that is virtuous, meaning they're able to find other employees that are excited and bring it to the company. So they have higher profits, they're able to hire more people. And again, this can't be everybody. It's a fact of nature that even the greatest ball players, only a few of them become pros. That everybody hits their head at a certain level. And there's been, though, in every decade, several different independent money managers who go about the business their own way, who have significantly outperformed the market, who have clearly demonstrated the efficient market theory is nonsense, and that if you have an ability and a desire and a way of selecting either those companies, or maybe it's just the emotional part. I'm really not sure if it's the combination of it. I don't have my book in front of me. There's a great great quote by Bernard Baruch in the beginning of my book, which basically tells you give up before you even try investing. That's how hard it is. Well, obviously, I don't believe that. But I do believe 180 degrees different than these commercials that come on that say you too in only half an hour can master the market. You too can generate tremendous returns in 30 minutes per day. I think that's nonsense. I think the market is difficult. I think we're clearly in an environment right now which is kind of difficult to make money, but certainly not impossible. And I will tell you that by focusing on individual companies that trade either intrinsically below their value and having the patience of a value investor, or whether it's the Magnet method of investing approach, which combines value, growth, and momentum, a little bit similar to O'Neill. And folks, to go back over what Voice America is all about, all of these shows are archived. And you can go back years and years and listen to all the investors from Jimmy Rogers to Michael Steinhardt to William O'Neill, who joined us on this show three separate times, took the full hour three times because he had that much he wanted to share at that time. And then after those shows, asked me to come out and meet with him. And frankly, I had a notion that he was upset with me, that he thought Magnet was a little bit similar to Can Slim, and you know, who was I to change a few letters or something along those lines. He said something completely different. He was impressed the fact that we came out of with a theory of what makes a great company. We went ahead and back-tested that theory. It's not data mining. His approach is someone significantly different. What I'm interested in is what Gil Morales did after those years of William O'Neill. What did he learn? What did he do? And how did he write this book about making 18,000%? Well, we'll hear all about it following a break. We have to go to the sponsors. And following that, we'll bring Gil on to tell his story, his relationship with O'Neill, and how he's taken it to another level. So stick with us. We'll be right back. We're on Voice America Business. We'll be back with Magnet Investing in just a minute.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety. Are you tired of the government squandering your tax dollars on bailouts and overpaid bureaucrats? On Free Markets with Dr. Mike Beitler, Mike Beitler and his guests explain why big government regulations are the problem and innovative businesses and free markets are the solution. Listen to Free Markets with Dr. Mike Beitler, Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Business Network.
Are you ready to grow your business? Listen for the Independent Business Owners Show with your coach, Rick Corrado. This entertaining talk radio program will bring you the tools to help increase your business. You'll learn sales success, time management, lead generation, business development, life balance, and much more. Rick Corrado is here to help you take your business to the next level. Listen for the Independent Business Owners Show, heard live every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're logged on to Magna Investing with Jordan Kimmel. If you would like to call in with a question or comment for Jordan or his guest, dial toll-free at 866-472-5790. Once again, that number is 866-472-5790. Let's get back to another segment of Magna Investing. Here's Jordan Kimmel.
And welcome back, everybody, to Magna Investing with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. And as always, we scour around for new authors and great investors, and we came across Gil Morales, who has co-authored a book with an outrageous title, and he's a disciple, I believe, of William O'Neill. So, Gil, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jordan, for having me on.
All right, and before we get into the meat of what you want to talk about, please help me with a short bio of who you are, where you came from, the full title of the book, and your co-author, and then we'll get into some of the meat here.
Okay, that could be a mouthful, but I'll start with the fact that I am the co-managing director, along with Dr. Chris Ketcher of Moak Investors LLC, which is a California RIA. We publish a online investment advisory website, www.virtueofselfishinvesting.com. I also author my own website, gilmoreport.com, G-I-L-M-O-report.com. I left O'Neill in 2005 after an eight-year career there, where I served as vice president in charge of managing the institutional advisory group. I was also an internal portfolio manager, where I ran part of the internal account for 8 years. And I was also chief market strategist for William O'Neill. And finally, I did publish a book with O'Neill, co-authored a book titled How to Make Money Selling Stocks Short, which was published by Wiley in 2004.
Well, fantastic. And so I've mentioned to you, we've had Bill on here before. He is, I believe, a living legend in investing.
Yes.
I'm excited, I mean, for you having those 8 years with him side by side. Let me just ask, first of all, what was the most important thing you learned working with him?
I think with Bill, you can learn about the market, and he has a lot of great lessons. He's an incredible teacher. But what I really got out of working with the guy was discovering a lot about myself psychologically, as well as the whole idea of making a lot of money in the market and not getting carried away with it, not getting carried away with either success or the point of view, lose perspective. And basically blow yourself out. O'Neill's seen a lot of people come and go in the business, having been there for 50, 55 years now, I believe. And he was very adamant about not getting carried away with yourself. He would slam you over the head if he found you doing that. For example, if I called him up, I remember calling him up once in 98 when we had AOL and Schwab, and I was long on stocks, or I was long Schwab, and it was going up like mad, and I'd call him up, and I'd be all excited. And he would listen very quietly to me, go on, blah, 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 about how much money we're making. And then finally he'd let out this big kind of whooshing sigh, which kind of went like that. And then he'd say to me, don't talk about your stock, and he'd hang up. And the lesson there was, it was pretty much a lesson from the movie Wall Street, where Gordon Gekko says, first rule about stocks is don't get carried away with them. It compromises your judgment. And O'Neill's very right on that. So I think for me, being successful in the markets and being able to take that wealth to simplify my life rather than get carried away and complicate it, has really been probably the strongest takeaway that I got from working with the guy, to be honest.
Right, and I think that's great. I mean, the whole idea about being balanced, and again, we all know the definition that we've seen a few bubbles hit where the higher they go, the more we want in, the more we get carried away.
Yes.
When I say we, that's the investment public history, and so I think that's a great, great lesson to share. And so let me ask, I mean, you obviously learned a tremendous amount inside there, but then you went out on your own. Maybe what you did changed. I'll ask you, did you adapt your trading strategy after you left the firm?
I didn't really adapt my trading strategy. I've obviously expanded some of the work that I've done on the short side, and of course Dr. Ketcher and myself have developed our own little rules as subsystems to use, but we don't really override the basic foundation that we were taught by O'Neill, which I should mention encompasses more than just canned slim. There are a lot of other techniques that O'Neill used because he recognizes how different cycles work and that different types of stocks, not necessarily growth stocks, could lead. For example, after 2001, he knew very well that defense stocks were going to lead, and they weren't necessarily fitting the template in terms of fundamentals that Can Slim might require. Mm-hmm. But we were able to make a lot of money in stocks like Lockheed. In that sense, I've used stuff like that, but I haven't really veered away from it. What has happened to me as a hedge fund manager running money in the public, I ran into some issues with the psychological aspects of this, where I now had clients looking over my shoulder.
Mm.
And where I had expected to come in, run a hedge fund for accredited investors who were of enough, wealthy enough that they wouldn't worry about the volatility inherent in my style, which can produce 20 to 30% drawdowns and sometimes even more, drawdowns, which I should note I've always recovered from, you can't handle all the pressure suddenly that comes from these clients. And so that's really affected my psychology. And over the last year, that's something I've had to work with, or work through, rather. And that became a major topic within the book. In fact, my review of my mistakes in 2009, which was a slump year for me, really were the genesis for this book, even though, ironically, the title has all this business about making a lot of money in the market. I mean, that sells books, yes, but I really think the meat of the book is in learning how I've coped with the life after O'Neill, essentially, which is a different ballgame. You know, Bill O'Neill never came into my office, you know, every day going, how are we doing? How's the month going? Are we up for the month or down for the month?
Right.
You know? He would come in, if you were having a slump, he would come in and would be very supportive and try and help you get out of it. And this quarter, now this is my first year of running money for O'Neill, and all of a sudden I'm down 32%, so I've made about a 75% round trip back to the downside.
Difficult.
But by the end of the year, I was able to recover and be up 82%. At the end of the year, O'Neill didn't bother me the whole way, but at the end of the year, he came in and he's laughing and he says to me, you know, for a second there, I didn't think you were going to make it, but you did. And he said that said a lot about me as a trader, because really the most difficult thing for any trader is that you will have slumps and you will have difficult times and you will have periods where you feel like nothing you do goes right. And how you're able to cope with that and come back from that, O'Neill felt that's what distinguished great traders from just good traders or also-ran traders. And I like to think that even with my slump in 2009, I was able to run my own account up about 100% in May alone, short selling. You can see the break in the market. You know, you need some kind of move like that. It's always about what the market gives you to make money. But that got me back on track. So in my view, I've always been able to come back from these downdrafts.
Right, and I think that the key is maybe psychology is either accepting the volatility and embracing it and saying these drawdowns happen, or you all want to learn a way to kind of see around the corner and eliminate the downdraft. I'm not sure with your strategy being aggressive the way you are, you can avoid a downdraft.
Right, right.
So the point is sticking with it and not giving up on yourself. So talk to us, you know, you the question about myths, and there's all kinds of myths. Give us the biggest trading myth out there regarding market timing.
Well, that can't be done. We already proved that it can be done. I think Dr. Chase, my colleague Chris Ketcher, Dr. K is what we call him, his timing model proves that you can. O'Neill's work proves that you can, because follow-through days tell you when you're in a market uptrend, and distribution days are what he uses to determine when the market is rolling over and going into a downtrend. So we have demonstrated that you can time the market and that you need to time the market, because I think investors have learned from the markets of 2000 to 2002 and most recently in 2008 that this sort of stay dumb and long-term, hold them forever type of strategy is suicidal.
Well, let me just throw out a distinction, though, if I can, though, because I came across some true market timers who use days and counts and things like peaks and more of an Elliott wave type of thing, Prechter wave. Mm-hmm. I think what you're talking about is really understanding the technicals of the market and whether the market is healthy or dangerous, and that's a little bit not market timing, but more technical use to say whether we're in a healthy or sick environment.
Yeah, I would say to just determine what is the general trend and flow of the market. Is it constructive where you can make money,
right,
or is it not? Yeah, not necessarily picking out the little twists and turns in the market. We just try to determine which direction the general trend is and then move with it.
Right, right. And so, you know, I will read your book. I love to read, you know, successful investors. And again, uh-huh. So you have a partnership. I guess, you know, one question I have for you is, what is your belief in use of margin?
I love to use margin, but you have to recognize that it needs to be used when you're going to be right. And if you're going to use heavy leverage, that's fine, but you need to use tighter stops. And actually, a lot of my problems in 2009 were being heavily leveraged shall I say, financial stocks near the bottom, and I was convinced that some of the big banks were going to have to go under before it was all over, and that whacked me pretty good in just a series of a few days. So I've been improving my risk management with respect to using leverage, but for the average investor, I think you need to just stay on a cash basis and get good to the point where you feel comfortable with your decision-making and your position scaling that you are comfortable using leverage if you think you are onto something and you've picked off a good spot. But I love leverage. It's really how we've made big money, but of course it has to be used properly or it can chop you off at the knees or worse yet, just chop your head off.
Right. Lots of rope can lead to lots of problems. No question.
You got
about
it.
That.
That's right.
So listen, we only have a couple minutes left. What I'd like to do, Gil, I'll let you give out all your contact information, mention the name of your book again, and then give us a parting thought. What's more important to you, the state of the market or literally uncovering the 5 or 10 potential market leaders?
Well, I would say both elements are important, but I have found that even in markets that are sloppy and choppy, such as this market, you can find leading stocks that will continue to perform well. And I would use case in point, or cases in point, would be Netflix, F5, Acme Packet, stocks like Riverbed Technologies, Salesforce.com. If you look at these stocks, they've actually continued to trend higher even as the market has been correcting since early May. So to me, it's really more about watching your stocks first and then understanding what the general trend of the market is. But also, I have an understanding that the general trend of the market may not indicate that my stocks have topped. The market can top. Some of these stocks can continue for a while.
Right. So. Gil, listen, I got to interrupt you. We wanted your contact information. But listen, for my own protection and yours too, we have to remind everybody we're not recommending any stocks here. We're not giving any endorsements to any stocks. Everyone's got to do their own research. Gil, those are definitely strong names. It's a strong message you carry. And I think our listeners should tune into your site and check out your book, and we'll take it from there.
All right. VirtuousSelfishInvesting.com. That's it.
All righty. Well, listen, thanks so much for your time. And following this quick break, we're going to change the subject here. We're going to talk a little bit about socially responsible investing. We'll talk to Steve over at First Affirmative. And stick with us. We will be right back following this quick break.
The market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety. These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Perform at your maximum potential, you need to have all aspects of your life working properly. On Mind, Brain, and Body, Dr. Michael John Kell will bring you honest, open discussions concerning your physical, mental, and financial health. If you're ready to find purpose and meaning in your life, tune in to Mind, Brain, and Body every Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific. Mind, Brain, and Body on Voice America Health and Wellness. Radio dedicated to your health, wealth, wisdom, and purpose.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're logged on to Magna Investing with Jordan Kimmel. If you would like to call in with a question or comment for Jordan or his guests, dial toll-free at 866-472-5790. Once again, that number is 866-472-5790. Let's get back to another segment of Magna Investing. Here's Jordan Kimmel.
And folks, welcome back to Magnet Investing with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. And for well over a year, I've been talking about a theme of looking at companies and looking at the market in addition to financial returns in some other way, in a socially responsible way. And it's really a pleasure to bring on right now the president of First Affirmative Financial Network. It's Steve Sheath. And Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Jordan.
And Steve, let me ask you, before we get into the meat of what the mission is at First Affirmative and what your clients and your company looks like, if you wouldn't mind just a couple minutes of your own background, and then we'll get into the kind of meat of the socially responsible investing styles.
Well, sure. I've been in financial services in one form or another since 1977, so I've got a fairly long track record and pedigree. I've been focused on the social investment or sustainable investing space since 1989. So many people consider me to be kind of one of the leaders, one of the pioneers in this field as well. Certainly in the early 90s, not very many folks had heard about this, but we were working hard on it and trying to create a whole new call it a segment, if you will, of the financial services industry. And you know, fast forward to today, I'm president of a company for the past 12 years, an independent registered investment advisor that works with socially conscious investors. So we design custom portfolios of stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, various other things to serve the needs of investors that are looking to make money and make a difference with their money at the same time.
Right, right. And there's all kinds of different initials and acronyms. One I actually like the best myself is the impact investing style. But I think what we need to do is talk about this a little bit more. I think that we are hearing this great debate, and I think it's an important debate because the more you hear of it, I think the clearer the answer comes. But there are people who literally scoff at green investing and socially responsible investing and say all you do is give up returns, and companies that think about this or tend to be unprofitable. And I was at your conference just a couple of months ago. You had some great speakers. Maybe you want to talk about this issue for a minute.
Well, first of all, I guess I would start by attempting for anybody who's listening to bust the myth that you just expressed, this mm-hmm. myth that you have to give up something in order to do good with money.
Right.
You know, frankly, it's crap. It is total mythology, and those of us that have been doing it now for a while and all of our clients understand that, especially, Jordan, in the U.S. large-cap domestic equity space, mm-hmm. there is absolutely no doubt for anybody who's been paying attention, anybody who wants to read the academic studies, that you don't have to give up anything in terms of return to invest in the more responsible companies, which we believe will do better long-term, better for us as investors and better for us all as citizens of a growing, vibrant, healthy society. It is true that we don't have all the asset classes covered mm-hmm. in this SRI or sustainable or green or impact investing space, whichever term you might want to use today. You know, we don't have good product, if you will, in emerging markets, for example. There's only one viable real estate manager of real estate securities that, you know, that I think works for our clients. And so, you know, it's a little bit more challenging mm-hmm. to create a properly diversified, broadly diversified, and deeply diversified portfolio in this, you know, with this strategy. But we've done it very successfully now for a long time for a lot of people. And so those who poo-poo the idea simply don't know.
Right, and I agree with you. There's enough academic studies out, and I've read, I think, everyone I can get my hands on. And I think that it becomes a discussion, you know, in my mind anyway, of something, the distinction I'm putting behind between negative screening and positive screening, meaning looking for companies actually doing it right and doing it the best, versus an idea of negative screening that comes back from, well, I don't like that industry. And so you could potentially screen out a couple winning companies because you don't like an industry. But maybe have you heard or discussion about the difference between positive and negative screening?
Oh, yeah, and for many years. I mean, this is an ongoing conversation. And for me, it's a beautiful conversation because what it comes down to for those of us who work with individual investors or institutional investors, where we're trying to take their values or their priorities for society and overlay that onto a portfolio design process, it comes down to what the client wants, okay? So if a client simply does not want to own a tobacco company,
mm-hmm.
you know, first of all, that's really easy to accomplish
mm-hmm.
and really easy to replace a tobacco company in a portfolio with
sure.
something else that has similar performance characteristics, okay? But if you have a client, Jordan, that is okay with tobacco, just using that as one of many examples, is okay with tobacco, wants to own the best tobacco company, or let's take Big Oil, you know, wants to own the best oil company, a few months ago they probably would have had BP in their portfolio. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, you know, only time tells.
Mm-hmm.
So there are at least two and actually many different approaches here, and you've identified one that's kind of the traditional negative screening approach versus, I guess, what I would call a best-of-class approach.
Right, okay.
And both of those are very viable, depending on where the client's coming from.
Right, and I couldn't agree with you more about that, and I'll share with you an anecdote. We talked just the other day. I've shared on this show that we are talking about, even beyond the socially responsible, I think there's other metrics you could bring in, and according to our math, and we're going to share that later on within a couple of weeks, the number one ranked company, interestingly, was in BP space, but was not BP. I think it was really fascinating. But what I want to mention here, you know, you said something in the top of the show where you've been at this so long, you were kind of alone at that time or really didn't have as much company as you do right now. I will share we had Robert Zevin, you know,
oh,
on
yeah.
the show months ago.
Oh, yes.
Okay, but what I really want to bring up here is the fact that not only are a lot of people talking about this and engaging in it, I want you to share with the public what SRI in the Rockies is and what the feel of it is and what it's become after these years. I've heard about it. I want to hear from you.
And you haven't been there yet, so this is also a pitch to you to
right.
the joy.
And I expect to be there this year, but pitch me and
Very
pitch
good.
The crowd because I think we want to talk about this.
So SRI in the Rockies, Jordan, is the premier conference or gathering, if you will, of investors and investment professionals who are looking to use money in a different way, in a more healthy, more positive, maybe even transformative way. In other words, as I said earlier, looking to make money and to make a difference at the same time with their money. And this is in juxtaposition to the philosophy of let's make as much as we can, let's ignore how the money is being made, let's ignore what kind of impact, negative impacts companies are having on society, and at the end of the year, if we feel like it, we'll give some of it away, and we'll give it to nonprofit organizations that are trying to, you know, fix some of the damage, if
mm-hmm.
you will. The folks that are attracted to this industry and to my conference and to my company as clients are different. They're looking to be they're looking for a both and. Let's make money and make a positive difference at the same time. So this conference is a financial conference, but it's a very different financial conference than anything you might have ever been to, Jordan, in the sense that, you know, nobody wears ties. You know, it kind of feels like a big family reunion. The tie that binds everybody is this concept of using money in a more transformative way. And so you'll have people there that are from you know, from the big Wall Street houses. You'll have people there that are from local banks and credit unions. You'll have nonprofit organizations and other large institutional investors who are investing in a way that, you know, that we're talking about this morning. It's a very eclectic group, very high-energy group, very intellectual, a lot of networking, and frankly, a lot of outcomes. In other words, people meet, get to know each other, cook up new ideas, and go work on them as a result of coming to our conference. And so we've been doing this for 20 years, so we're expecting 650 people to join us for our 21st annual conference in November.
Wow, what a fantastic story. And I did tell you, I do plan on being there. I was at your conference in New York City a couple months ago, and I think everyone there who had been to SRI previously, SRI in the Rockies, all talked about the energy, the camaraderie. And also, I think it's really important that this is a very important issue. We have to, a lot of literature to disseminate and a lot of ideas to share. And 21 years of running that conference, I think that's great. And see, what I want to do here is we're going to need to take a break in a minute. Before we do that, maybe I asked you to stay for another segment. There's more to go over, more about First Affirmative. But before we do that, why don't you give out maybe the contact information for both your firm, where they can find out more about SRI and the Rockies, start planning a trip out, and get ahead of the curve.
Okay. Well, First Affirmative website is www.firstaffirmative.com, and it's F-I-R-S-T, affirmative.com. So that's pretty simple and pretty easy. And SRI in the Rockies is just that, www.sriintherockies.com. We will be gathering November 18th to 20th in San Antonio, Texas. This is a beautiful new JW Marriott resort and spa. And as I said, we'll have about 600. We're expecting about 650 people here for our 21st annual conference. So there's a lot of information that can be pulled off the website, including speakers and agendas and all of that. And you can look back at previous year's agendas as well. I'm not sure what else to say, but I'd be more than happy to speak to anybody who might have questions about whether it's appropriate for them as an attendee or as an investor or as an investment professional, or for that matter, as a product or service provider that may want to come and introduce something to the sustainable and responsible investment industry.
Right, fantastic. And again, the feedback I heard was that there's a lot of information, there's a lot of business, but there's also a lot of fun, even some dancing that goes on. So I'm going to give the plug there. I plan on showing up, Steve. I appreciate you staying for another segment. So here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break. We'll go to the sponsors. When we come back, we'll hear more from Steve Sheath, more about SRI, more about SRI in the Rockies, and more about his firm and how his financial advisors work with their clients. So stick with us. We will be right back.
The market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. Drawing on resources from wellness communities throughout America and abroad, the show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Wellness Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're logged on to Magnet Investing with Jordan Kimmel. If you would like to call in with a question or comment for Jordan or his guests, dial toll-free at 866-472-5790. Once again, that number is 866-472-5790. Let's get back to another segment of Magnet Investing. Here's Jordan Kimmel.
And welcome back, everybody, to Magnet Investing with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. And we are joined by Steve Sheath, and Steve is the president of First Affirmative Financial Network, a broker-dealer, I believe, a registered investment advisor that specializes in socially responsible investing on behalf of their clients. And let me just make sure I got that right, Steve. I don't want to misrepresent. Broker-dealer and RIA?
No, we're not a broker-dealer, Jordan. We're simply an independent registered investment advisor.
Great. And thanks for the clarification. I thought I was tripping over something, so I'm glad you clarified that. But what I'll go back to again, in your conference was just a tremendous speaker who went through maybe 20 different studies that had been done, really showing quantitatively that companies that think both about financials and about being responsible tend to outperform. And after all this and all this time and everything else, we saw in the paper, Wall Street Journal, just this week, a feature article talking about socially responsible thoughts by management is absolutely ludicrous and doesn't work. And maybe you want to talk about the origin of, you know, the dated things he's thinking about and what you thought, because I know there's been a huge response and a lot of controversy over that article just this week.
Yeah, it very timely for this particular conversation, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think it's important, first of all, to draw a line of demarcation between investors who are looking to invest in companies, and in our case, investors who are looking to invest in the most responsible and most profitable companies, and companies, because this article was really coming at it from a perspective of the company, of company management, and incorporating what they called CSR, or corporate social responsibility, into the management of a company. And, you know, my feeling is that there was nothing new in this article. These are tired arguments that have been kicked around now for at least in my experience, at least a couple of decades. And it's all predicated on the ancient theory that Milton Friedman put forth that, you know, a company's primary responsibility is to be as profitable as possible. And, of course, to forget about or totally ignore everything else, you know, ignore the impacts that the company might be having on society at large. And, in fact, implied but not stated is to profit as much as possible by offloading bad stuff onto society at large, okay?
Wow.
You know, externalizing costs. As much externalization as possible is a good thing under Friedman's, you know, original theory.
Right. It just sounds kind of absurd when you hear it out loud. And, I mean, a couple of examples come to my mind. If I thought about a chemical company that was enhancing their earnings by polluting their local river instead of effectively, efficiently, you know, carting it away responsibly, who in the world would say, I'll invest in them because they make more money?
Well, you know, Jordan, it wasn't long ago when that was standard practice. I vividly remember sitting in a business school finance class in the mid-70s, probably around 1976, which tells you kind of how old I am. But, you know, we were doing a case study on a new manufacturing plant. We happened to be in Wisconsin. The paper industry is very big in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a case study on where to locate a new plant.
Mm-hmm.
The top two criteria at that time were proximity to a railroad, which makes perfect sense because
you've
got to ship in your raw materials and ship out your finished products, and proximity to a river.
Oh, no.
The reason the river was important is because that's where you dumped all your, you know, all of the crap.
Oh, no.
Now, literally, 2 years later, the Cuyahoga River in downtown Cleveland caught on fire.
Wow.
Which led to, you know, a flurry of environmental legislation and dramatic improvements. But this was not obvious to corporate management in those days, you know, until it hit them between the eyes.
Right, and that is what a great example, what a case in point. And I'll share something with you, and I want you to kind of expand on the theme here, if you will. We had Ed Friedman on the show a couple months ago talking about, you know, from the Business Roundtable, and what he was talking about, he had written a letter for a large magazine and talked about stakeholders. And they came back to him, they said, there's a typo you used over and over. You meant shareholders, but you wrote stakeholders, so we corrected that for you. And here was the editor of a large financial magazine, not even familiar with the term stakeholders.
Yeah, that's sad.
So maybe you want to just share, you know, what kind of stakeholders a socially responsible company would really think about when they do their long-term planning.
Well, you know, Jordan, this stakeholder concept is something that's been working its way through business schools now for probably 15 years or so. And it essentially what it's doing is suggesting, and in my opinion should be strongly suggesting, that companies consider the decisions that they make as it affects all of the various stakeholders of the company. Shareholders being one group of stakeholders,
mm-hmm.
Investors being one group of stakeholders. But other stakeholders are employees, families of employees, the communities in which the company operates, the vendors and other suppliers to the company, which, you know, many times rely on a big company, you know, as a major source of
sure.
income and whatnot, and the natural environment itself, okay? So all of those things, or all of those groups of stakeholders, in my opinion, and the opinion of more enlightened, better managed companies these days, are considered in the process of making decisions, which
right.
impact any of those particular stakeholder groups. And as a result, what you get is a management team that's bigger picture, longer term in its orientation, and frankly, better at managing all the various aspects of a very complex company today. And there's a lot of research, and you said earlier that you'd read a bit of this research. There's now quite a lot of academic research that's drawing direct connections between environmental management and good management and bottom-line profitability. In
mm-hmm.
other words, you know, good environmental management is now becoming more or less a proxy for good management.
Right.
Okay? My theory is that's because environment is bigger picture stuff. You know, it's longer-term stuff.
Sure.
If a management team is good at managing environmental impact, they're pretty good at managing a lot of other.
Right. If you can get to thinking and careful in that issue, again, Steve, just to bring it all the way to 30,000 feet, if you're treating all these different stakeholders responsibly, respectfully, and thinking about them in the long term, then it's almost a bygone conclusion. How could that company not, over time, be more profitable than a careless company just trying to maximize the quarter? It only makes sense.
It makes perfect logical sense if you are an investor that's taking a long-term perspective.
Right.
If
right.
you're an
and
investor...
We're not talking about the traders.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Steve, here's what's going to happen. We're going to come up to the top of the hour before we do that, before they play music in our ears. Give us, again, the contact information for your firm, for SRI in the Rockies. And I will tell you, and I'll tell all our listeners there, I'm looking forward to it, and I'll leave all my ties at home.
Thank you, Jordan. So First Affirmative, of course, has a network of advisors scattered around the country. And we work with investors that want to invest in a way that, you know, helps to make money and make a difference at the same time. You can find out more at firstaffirmative.com. And we produce a big conference in the fall, November 18th to 20. We'll be producing the 21st annual SRI in the Rockies Conference. We'll be in San Antonio. More information there is www.sriintherockies.com.
Hey, fantastic, Steve. They got the music a little loud in my ear. I think everybody heard that. I really appreciate it. And by the way, this link comes up in 48 hours. Share it with your advisors. Let them listen in, too. All righty?
Very good, sir. Thank
you. We'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the rest of the weekend and have a great one. Thanks again for listening, all. We'll be back next week with more Magnet Investing right here on Voice America Business. Have a great week ahead.
Voice America Business Channel would like to thank you for logging on to Magna Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Tune in each and every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern Time for another exciting hour of Magna Investing right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, the Voice America Business Channel.